From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dale Ahlquist, president of the Society of Gilbert Keith Chesterton and editor of The Story of the Family, G.K. Chesterton on the only state that creates and loves its own citizens. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Dale Ahlquist in their conversation.
You're not trusting God when you say it's going to be your decision who gets born and who doesn't get born. That's not letting our trust in God be manifested at all. And, you know, it was God's will for G.K. Chesterton and his wife to not have any children. And because of that, you know, we are all their children now, because he was able to be the great writer he was, because he would have probably been completely swept away with his children. So it's amazing how that simple allegiance to life is what it is. It's a whole chapter in his great book, Orthodoxy, called The Flag of the World, that you have to have a loyalty to life. That's a basic human thing, a loyalty to life.
Let's get back to something we talked about earlier, communism, capitalism, and something worse. So the idea here is that the communist attacks the family, the capitalist betrays the family, and I hope you can expand on that a little bit so people can catch. When I first read this, honestly, I was a little discombobulated. But anyway, sure. The communist attacks the family, the capitalist betrays the family, and then the very astonishing vision of the Hitlerite defending the family. And the way in which Hitler did this was to make the family dependent on him and dependent on his semi-socialist state.
Right. He wanted to breed as many people as possible. That was part of his eugenics philosophy, because he thought that the Teuton, the Aryan, was the best that mankind had to offer. And he wanted as many children as possible. And, you know, you could say he was a strong family man, but he had a motive. He wanted as many German bodies as possible, because they had to get rid of the inferior races. It was just very, very pragmatic, as it were. And Chesterton says, when your goal is efficiency or quote unquote progress, you don't really have a goal. Efficiency is not a goal and progress is not a goal. You have to state what your end is. And when you find out what the ends of Nazism were, you realize how evil they were.
He was arguing in some of his radio broadcasts against various people in his day, like a Mr. Victor Newberg. And this Victor Newberg had written a letter to complain about an article Chesterton had published concerning birth control. Newberg contended that a man does not practice birth control in order to indulge his passions, but in order that his quite natural, and that's the operative word, his quite natural and therefore legitimate sexual passion may have no unforeseen and undesired results. And Chesterton takes that and he points out that not every natural desire is legitimate.
Right.
And he gives an example of, you know, maybe you're in a crowded theater, or I forget the exact example that he gives, but your natural inclination is get out of that theater because it's on fire. And that natural inclination is not right if you're trampling over little babies on the way out.
Right. And again, self-control is the right form of birth control. And something that just doesn't occur to the modern mind, the idea of restraint and moderation. Chesterton, you know, by pointing out this simple fruit of the Holy Spirit, which is self-control, is something that's very unpopular in the world today. Nothing about our society encourages self-control, whether it's indulgence in material possessions or in food or in some other pleasure, especially sexual pleasure. Self-control is simply not what we are encouraged to do. And you can't, you know, Chesterton just doesn't have any time for the people who says, well, it's just simply a natural desire. Yeah, we have to control our quote-unquote natural desires and show that we are actually the ones controlling them rather than them controlling us.
Yeah, well said. A chapter on parents and public education, and you did allude to this earlier on in our conversation, but the loss of parental control is in its turn due to the increase of official control. And this is surely the more natural because it is an increase of official control over parents. This is especially true to the eclipse of the father by the schoolmaster, and later on we can talk a little bit about the role of the mother, but parents in public education, elaborate.
Yeah, I think this final two chapters of the book, Hank, are really important. I think everything we've talked about up till this point has been quite expected, what anyone would expect to hear about from a book defending the family and what makes the family important and what behaviors, you know, promote a healthy family and why the world is against those things. Everything we've said is, in a way, very expected. But these last two chapters are dealing with, I think, things that we don't think about. And as I said before, public education has probably done more to undermine the family in our society than anything else. Our children are not being taught things that their families would be teaching them, to the point that now families have given up teaching those things and are kind of just going with what the school teaches rather than trying to stand up to a school system that has become more prominent and more powerful than the family, certainly more well-funded than the family. And everything about our approach to public education is really not only anti-family, but it's anti-intellectual. Chesterton's criticism of education are very profound. It's one of the reasons why I've been involved with starting a Christian classical education, you know, high schools, that the Chesterton Academies throughout the country, because our approach to education has been, as Chesterton calls, the separation of everything from everything else. We don't have an integrated way of presenting knowledge.
What about that? Expand on that. I mean, that's a profound idea in and of itself. So a mother in a home has to be a generalist.
Yes.
In the educational structure, everyone's a specialist. What's the problem with that?
Well, the problem is that what a student is learning in one class is they're not told how that connects to what they're being taught in another class. And then at another class, they don't know how these things fit together because they're only being told what the specialty of that teacher is expected to them. And there's no overall plan of how these classes are integrated with one another. And so they are only taught fragments of truth because it's within a discipline, and fragments of thought. And they cannot even think a complete thought because they are so narrow in how they've been instructed. And of course, they're certainly not being taught the one truth that binds all the other truths together, which is the incarnation. If they're not taught ultimate truth, Chesterton says, they're really not being taught anything at all. They're just being taught fragments of truth, a lot of which isn't even true. And so they think in fragments, they talk in fragments, and they become very frustrated. Children, because they're not taught to be complete thinkers, and their language suffers from it, and they can't even express their own frustration. And one of his great lines, the one thing that is never taught in any of the public schools today is that there is a whole truth of things, and that in knowing it and speaking it, we are happy. There's a whole truth of things, and that in knowing it and speaking it, we are happy. So our students aren't taught the whole truth, which makes them unhappy, and they don't know how to express it. They can't speak the whole truth, which would also make them happy. So as a result, you have a lot of angry young people frustrated by the fact that they can't even express their own anger.
And the irony is we're paying more and more for less and less. I mean,
yeah, that's what we're doing. Yeah. Paying more and more for less and less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's a simple arithmetic to this. The mother will have less time with the family if she has more time with the factory or the office. Idea is the insanity of the mother, this concept. The insanity of the mother leaving her highest contribution, her highest duty, to someone else, maybe to a nanny. And then she goes off with the pretext that she's now liberated and works for a corporation. So she's giving the most important thing that she can give away to someone else for a paltry sum of money. By comparison, the sum of money is always going to be paltry.
Right, right. And, you know, people say, oh, this is Chester, he hates women. And no, he loves women. You know, he has an ongoing debate with the feminists because his argument with the feminists is that women have always been able to do all the things that men can do. Sometimes they've had to do them because men can't do them.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with scholar Dale Ahlquist. In a world that has lost touch with normality, it takes a pioneer to rediscover the wonders of the normal. In The Story of the Family, the profound and prolific G.K. Chesterton illustrates the glory of the family, the heritage of romance, love, marriage, parenthood, and home. This masterful compilation of texts and quotes offers a hymn and praise of the saucepan, the kettle, the hairbrush, the umbrella stand, what he calls the brave old bones of life. With piercing wit, Chesterton pits all these venerable truths against the fashions of divorce and abortion, along with the troubling philosophies that have afflicted education and the workplace since the early 20th century. To receive your copy of The Story of the Family, G.K. Chesterton on the Only State That Creates and Loves Its Own Citizens, edited by Dale Ahlquist, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. An infinite God reduced to the size of a human embryo, the creator of time and space, invading both in human form? Such is the mystery and the majesty of the Incarnation, supreme being condescending to become one of us. Perhaps nothing is more important than grasping the significance of the coming God in human flesh. Without the life, death, and resurrection of the incarnate one who walked among us, our world would be unfathomably dark. To be equipped as a witness and to be inspired in your walk, you'll want to feast on Hank Hanegraaff's book, Incarnation, The Ultimate Self-Revelation of God. To receive your copy of Incarnation, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, most people would rather die than think, and many of them do. Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library and receive a complimentary subscription to CRI's award-winning Christian Research Journal. Just two of the benefits of membership. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org.
www.thebirthcontrol.org.
Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Chesterton scholar Dale Ahlquist, as they continue their conversation.
People say, oh, this is Chesterton, he hates women. And no, he loves women. He has an ongoing debate with the feminists because his argument with the feminists is that women have always been able to do all the things that men can do. Sometimes they've had to do them because men can't do them. Sometimes they're the ones pouring the hot oil down the walls as they're being attacked by enemies, right? They've had to fight in war at times. They've had to do things that men, for one reason or another, have not done. That's not been the problem. The problem is that there's one thing that women can do that men cannot do, and that is be a mother. Men cannot be mothers. And that is the unique thing that women have that men don't, is motherhood. And that's what the feminists were attacking, was motherhood. That was his whole argument against feminism, is that they were attacking the most feminine thing there is.
I think another interesting part of the book was the section on dangerous toys, where Chesterton talks about how we become so benighted as to think that a boy shouldn't play with a toy bow and arrow because that could be dangerous. And he makes the extension of the argument, the logical extension, to, well, if it can't have a toy bow and arrow, then we probably have to get rid of the pebbles on the beach as well.
Yeah. If you take away the toy gun, he'll pick up a stick and it'll become the toy gun right away. Yeah.
A Home and Work, the last chapter of the book, fantastic chapter, and the misfortune for us to live in an age in which anything done inside the house is termed drudgery. While anything done inside an office building is called enterprise. That's another kind of misuse of words.
Yes. And while the previous chapter, the one on education, was talking so much about the role of the woman, this last chapter on work really focuses a little bit more on the role of the man. But both chapters apply to both father and mother. But in this case, when the work has become so separated from the home that they're just two different worlds, and that the modern view is that the exciting stuff is all outside the home, and that's where the action is. And Chesterton argues it's just the opposite. We start families because the place of creativity and freedom and where life is truly lived is in the home. And we take all those elements of life out of the home, we end up really destroying the family. The house has nothing happening in it anymore because we've taken all those basic things of life out of the home. We've taken death and birth out of the home. We've taken the meals out of the home. We've taken the work out of the home. And that's why you have these suburbs that are truly bedroom communities, because the only thing people do is sleep there. There's no home life anymore because they're so busy with all these other activities. And really, they're very unhappy. They're chasing after the wind, as Ecclesiastes says. Whereas the home, he says, is the place where you can have a picnic on the floor or on the roof. I surprised my wife on our 30th wedding anniversary, Hank, by serving her dinner on the roof of our house. Yeah. The neighbors were out there taking pictures of us.
He really is crazy. Now,
yeah, he really is.
So here you have maybe a summation. Chesterton is saying what women want is, quote, an equal right with men in business and social careers at the expense of home and family. And then the most delicious part of all of this is where he says, when all are sexless, there will be equality. There will be no more women, no more men. There will be but a fraternity, free and equal. And then the clincher, he says, the only consoling thought is that if you go down this path, it can only endure for a generation.
Right. Yeah, that's a great way of destroying yourself. And, you know, Chesterton's great book, Orthodoxy, he argues that any bad philosophy, first of all, leads to insanity. It's an insane philosophy, but it also has the seeds of its own destruction. If we keep living and keep going the direction we're going, it is self-destructive. And that's a perfect example, and hugely prophetic too. You know, 100 years ago, he's saying, no men, no women will be sexless at a certain point, and everybody will be equal. Yeah. And what do you got? You got nothing after that, because you will have destroyed your whole species.
So what he's a master at is taking things to their logical conclusion.
Right.
And then doing it in a pithy way.
Yep, absolutely. And so he uses reason to its highest form, but he does it with humor, with wit, and you don't know how you suddenly got convinced of something, but he did it because you followed all of his arguments and you weren't aware at how well he's been doing it the whole time. He is the master of that.
One more thing. This is directly from you. At least I remember it being from you. The main point of distributism is that everything starts local. A family-run business is part of a family-run world. It's a bottom-up solution. The city's functions are secondary to the home's functions. The school is a preparation for the home, not the home being a mere dropping-off place for the school. If we take care of our families, we take care of the world. And if we have families, we have the world. And that might as well have been one-upping Chesterton.
Well, I was really putting all of his great ideas together, but it did come out pretty well.
Expand on that a little bit.
Well, you know, that's one of those things, it's almost hard to expand on because it really is quite self-explanatory.
Yeah.
It's very encapsulated. But the idea of localism, Chesterton used the term distributism. It's a very misunderstood word. And so at the Chesterton Society, we're doing away with the word and replacing it with localism, which is something people can understand immediately. The idea is that you should have local control of both government and commerce, making everything immediately answerable to the folks who are affected by it the most. So if you keep commerce local, you control it. If you keep government local, you could control it. You should keep your politician close enough to kick him. And, you know, obviously we benefit from certain trades and businesses that are not close to us, but they should be the exception and not the rule. Because if we become too dependent on things far away, well, you know, we will in effect become slaves to those things and we've lost control of it. It's the principle of subsidiarity. The things that affect you most directly, you should be in control of. And so localism is a good way of understanding that. But the most local thing there is the family. That's the most local thing there is. That's where life is most closely lived. And that's the thing that affects us directly. And so whatever serves the family is a good thing. And the family should not be serving all these other things because that will weaken the position of the family.
Talk about that localism just a little bit more, because I think this is a very important concept. I would suppose you'd be against someone driving 2 hours to go to church, let's say, as opposed to finding a church in their own local community. Engaging people in your own local community as opposed to neighbors being strangers.
Yeah, it is ironic how we have the best forms of communication in all of history, and yet our neighbors are strangers to us. We don't have a sense of community at all anymore. And I think if we did have a sense of community, we'd see different election results. Let's put it that way. The idea is if you take care of your whole family, you'll also, the next thing you do is you take care of the neighbor too, because the neighbors are start to watch out for each other. And I, you know, that was the world I grew up in. All the mothers were home. The kids were playing freely between the houses. And the neighbor's mother was looking after you just as much as your own mother was, because they were in cooperation with each other. And it was a place of, you know, it was crime-free, it was carefree, and it was very healthy. And these were, you know, I lived in a very mixed neighborhood, Protestant, Catholic, Jew, and we all got along very well because it was truly family values were in every house along the street. And so localism means neighbors are actually all, they do business together and they socialize together. and the community is taking care of itself. They're not dependent on a distant government or on a distant business either.
Well, Dale Ahlquist, I am so happy to have had you on the Hank Unplugged podcast. Thank you so much for your time. It's not taken for granted.
A great blessing to be with you, Hank. Thanks for inviting me. God bless you.
God bless you. And do remember this book, The Story of the Family, G.K. Chesterton on the only state that creates and loves its own citizens. Again, available for anyone who stands shoulder to shoulder with us in the battle for life and truth. And thank you for joining me. Look forward to seeing you next time with more.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Scholar Dale Ahlquist. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The Story of the Family, G.K. Chesterton on the Only State That Creates and Loves Its Own Citizens, edited by Dale Ahlquist. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website at equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order the Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI.